Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are probably quite excited that Major League Baseball players are reporting to camp. We're getting videos taken far away through fences of guys taking batting practice. It's that time of year again. Best shape of your life season. Things are... Hope springs eternal at the beginning of every baseball season, and that's where we are right now. Whipple, I think I have a sense that you're probably pretty excited, but how are you feeling? Tell me.
Yeah, I mean, it's back. The thing that we talk about for our entire lives and that we like to share with all of you to fill your ears for an hour every week, it is back, and I could not be more excited. I was just saying, it really feels like the off season has come, it's come to a close. It's kind of felt in standstill just because since Carlos Rodon signed, the Yankees have done a whole lot of nothing. But I think we've all had ample debates about the value of every roster spot and every possible combination of hypotheticals. It's time for some real baseball. And like you said, it's like the night before Christmas. You know, we all went to sleep last night dreaming of cameras taking faraway batting practice videos of players that you can faintly recognize. It's that season. And more importantly, it's like the first real spring training, regular start of the year we've had for Yankees Files. And that's super exciting. For baseball, this is about the most normal winter and spring that it's had in 4 years. I mean, all things to be really excited about.
Let's be careful what we say, because on February 13th, 2020, things were just as normal as they are today. You went to spring training in 2020.
I was one of the few people to see live baseball games in 2020, and yeah, life comes at you fast. I'm hoping it will not come at us that fast. but if there's another pandemic in the works, we can go back to the content drawer, pull out some drafts and fun stuff. I'd much prefer to talk about the 2023 New York Yankees, and I hope the global pandemic in the wings can hold off for a few years.
So, Whipple, we're going to get to the draft that we are doing today of the top five things we're each excited for about this season. But there's some stuff that is probably worth covering first. I don't know that any of us expected Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's elite defense to become one of the hottest topics on baseball Twitter, but here we are. Baseball Prospectus recently released their new defensive statistics, which take the position that range is the most important part of defense. And by range defense added, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa ranks, I think, third among shortstops in 2022 in their analysis. And by DRP, which is kind of their holistic defensive metric, he was the seventh best shortstop. So he's getting some, demerits for his arm and the simple balls that he misplays in that area. But, I was tweeting a little bit about that this morning, and Baseball Prospectus's Craig Goldstein ended up in our mentions, clarifying some things, which was really cool and really helpful. One thing that I've been saying on Twitter is that it's great that Baseball Prospectus, especially in the face of like the moderate controversy that they've created with these new range stats, one thing that they've done really well has been transparent about how the stats work, what's going into them, why they're spitting out the results they're spitting out. And so it was good to hear from Craig Goldstein in response to some of the stuff that we were saying. But I'm struggling with this with respect to something that I'll get to a little bit later. How are you feeling knowing that it's possible that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is actually a good shortstop?
I mean, you say that, and, he's not actually a good shortstop, because the most important point is this is all defense, and his bat was really, really bad. So
that's true.
It's part of baseball, They have to hit, and they have to field. But I think it's really interesting. Like, I did appreciate you. I think you were primarily driving that section of discourse, and I appreciated going through and reading, because it, the fact that we're getting better defensive metrics is something to celebrate, just because the defensive metrics that we have are, you know, they're reliable to a point, but they're ever evolving and they tell part of the story. And I don't think people fully understand. It's not like, you know, home runs or runs batted in where you know what's going into that ball that's leaving the yard. You know, OAA, DRS, their numbers being thrown out, but most people don't fully know what goes into them. I mean, I don't fully, you know, always understand what's going into them. And I think having the discussion and really understanding that versus just pointing to a number and say, this number is higher than this number and thus IKF is better than this player, is just a better way to approach a section of statistics that we really don't know that much about, and we're learning and evolving. And like you said, it makes sense. Like, it's hard to accept, but it really does make sense if a stat that's focused on range is ranking IKF as better than a lot of other shortstops, because his range was not the problem. I mean, I think most of the problem came from the fact that he got to balls and then did not have the substantive arm to complete a throw, or, you know, complete an accurate throw. And he was even still bailed out a lot by Anthony Rizzo. But I think the other thing that you were discussing that was really, you know, interesting is that we obviously are remembering IKF at his worst moments, and specifically his playoff struggles, and just the misses are going to stand out a lot more than the plays he did make, and the, you know, the chances he converted throughout a very long season, of which there were numerous. I mean, you know, he, for all of his failures, he did make some good plays in the field, and his range was never the thing I think stood out in my mind as his fallacy. So it's like a puzzle I feel like we're trying to get all the pieces to, and it makes sense. I don't think we have to say Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is a good shortstop, but I think I kind of understand now that, you know, you have a concrete metric saying his range is solidly above average, if not top of the league in some respects. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. It wasn't about the range, in my opinion, and it's like part of the puzzle. So I think that doesn't justify, at the end of the day, the Yankees, you know, trading for him because they liked his defense, because on the whole, his defense has a lot of glaring flaws that popped out in really big moments. But that is only part of the story, and baseball is a long season, and there's a lot of, you know, chances that the average person doesn't remember. You know, you remember the plays that aren't made versus the plays that are made. So it's very interesting. I think no one's going to change their IKF opinion based on this. But it's nice to learn more and just start to figure out, because I think it's not really about IKF. It's about just like baseball players in general. I think he's an easy vessel for us to use because his defensive issues are so top of mind. It's just easy to get a picture in your head and then see where the stats rank in comparison to that picture.
Sure. And what Craig Goldstein even said when we were going back and forth with him on Twitter is like, yeah, IKF's range is really good. Like, you know, per their stats, the only player with better range than IKF is Willy Adames. And his arm is really bad. You know, he said he's basically, you know, potentially you could see him as an edge case on both ends. And like, there's something to that. Of the top 27 shortstops by deserved runs prevented, DRP, which is Baseball Prospectus's holistic defensive metric, and the last seven of those guys, or rather the last eight of those guys, numbers 20 through 27 of shortstops who played at least 500 innings this past year, are all negative. They're below average defensively. IKF has the worst arm. He's the seventh best shortstop, but of the top 27 guys, he has the worst arm. You have to go all the way down to Jeremy Peña, who has like the worst arm by far of anyone playing shortstop, to get to a guy whose arm is worse than IKF. So like, he's getting a demerit there somewhere in the other components of DRP. He's getting a demerit for the plays he doesn't make, but and Dansby Swanson, who is at the top of this list, despite being perfectly average by range, what he goes to show is if you just make a lot of plays, you're going to grade out pretty well. Mm-hmm. Dansby Swanson makes a lot of the plays on the balls that he gets to. IKF doesn't make as many of the plays on the balls that he gets to, but he gets to a lot more balls. And I was listening to the podcast that BP put out about this, And basically what they said is, like, one thing that our eye test probably often underrates is the value of just getting to a ball. Mm-hmm. And, like, if it is true that range is the most important defensive, the most important aspect of individual defense, and if it is true that as a result, just getting to the ball is something that should be really highly valued, and if their relative weights of the factors going into deserved runs prevented are pretty good, like if they are accurately reflecting the different impacts of these components, arm, range, on run value, then, like, I'm willing to admit that maybe they've figured out something that I don't know, or that, you know, proves my eye test wrong. And the reason I'm struggling with this is I have taken the position many times on this podcast, I said it today on Twitter, that every 800 OPS hitter is the same. They're all equally valuable, is what I would tell you. Whether it's someone who, you know, hits 200, 350, 450, or someone who hits, you know, 400, 400, 400, I would tell you that those guys are equally valuable. Because OPS is really good as a holistic metric of telling us how valuable a hitter is. And what taking that position philosophically, I think, means is that I cannot let my aesthetic preferences for how I would like that 800 OPS to be composed get in the way of acknowledging that any other 800 OPS is just as good. And I think that's kind of where I'm ending up with IKF, where, you know, by their metrics, he's just as valuable or just as good defensively last year as Nico Horner. Nico Horner had slightly above average range. He, you know, was converting the balls he got to outs at a slightly above average rate. And holistically, he graded out the same as IKF. I would have preferred watching Nico Horner, and I would have felt like Nico Horner was more valuable. But as long as I'm willing to buy into these statistical methods that they've applied here, and if I'm willing to, you know, say I'm not too proud to say that my eye test trumps the work that they've done, then I might have to acknowledge that, like, I wouldn't have been right to say that Nico Horner would have been a better defender out there than IKF. And you make a very good point, which is that IKF doesn't hit at all, and that, you know, that's part of the game, and you got to be able to do both to a certain extent, unless you're doing, you know, something extraordinary. But, like, look, I'm not trying to sell anyone on IKF. I'm not sold on IKF. I want him off the team badly. I can't watch him take another plate appearance. I want that to be very clear. But it seems like they might know something about the defense. Mm-hmm. And I'm not too proud to say, look, my eye test tells me that I know their stat is wrong. Because, like, if you look at any other position or you look at the guys ahead of him, it makes sense. Like, we know Ha-Seong Kim is better than him. We know Willie Adames is better than him. We know Dansby Swanson is better than him. We know Taylor Walls is a phenomenal defender, even playing at a low volume. You know, if you look at second base, you know who it really likes? Gleyber Torres, Jonathan Scope, Marcus Semien, Brendan Rodgers, Andrés Giménez, Adam Frazier, Jorge Polanco, like Tommy Edman. We know these guys are good defenders. So discounting, you know, the conclusions that this stat encourages me to draw just because of the way it evaluates IKF, I don't think is fair. And you know, I'm struggling with that. I would like to be consistent. I would like to say that as long as I am sold, unless I have a legitimate statistical gripe with the way something is calculated, and obviously I'm not going to know 100% of everything because they have to keep their secret sauce. I would like to say that I want to apply the same evaluation across the board. Like, you know, every 2.5 FIP should be the same, in the same way that every 800 OPS should be the same, in the same way that every 6 DRP should be the same. And I don't like that, but I may have to at least change the way I talk about the issues I have with IKF's defense, which I think their stat still leaves me latitude to do.
So, I mean, I think you make a lot of really great points. And I think the biggest thing I come back to is that I just believe that, and I think Craig said this somewhere in that thread, that I believe that the arm issues can essentially be, well, okay, first, I believe that IKF is probably the most uniquely antagonizing defender, because I think that people who don't make plays, you don't often realize it or always realize it. And the people who do make plays are great. And IKF is like in between, where it's like he can make the plays, the range allows him to, and then the arm is preventing him from making those plays. And I feel like those components are so linked that the arm issues can be more disqualifying than I think this metric. Not, I don't think the metric is trying to say anything, but I think the arm issues are linked to the range. Like, those two things have to work in conjunction for plays to be made. Whereas, like, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong in this, or if I'm like trying to reason through it in my head, but you know, what goes into an 800 OPS, I think all different outcomes that don't connect to each other. Like, it's a series of isolated plate appearances. That's how I think of it, and why I think the arm issues can be disqualifying. And it's okay to say, like, what goes into this might not be, you know, I get what you're saying with the 800 OPS. I just think those two things might be linked in a way, like individual plate appearances and outcomes aren't linked. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that does make sense. And Goldstein even said in the thread, like, we often say range is most of what makes up a defender's value, but not always. It's possible that IKF's arm issues are being underrated relative to his range. It's possible that his range is being overvalued, if not overstated. He may be an edge case in multiple directions. So, like, it wouldn't be crazy, in the same way that I'm willing to buy that it's not crazy that I've been underrating range in the past, I'm also willing to buy that IKF is such an enigma at his position, where he can get to balls but then not make the play, not, you know, complete the play, but that still has some value. Like, it's not crazy to me to say that IKF strains the ability of this statistic to really describe what's going on. I think that can be true at the same time that the stat can be good, at the same time that, you know, there's room for criticism of IKF. Like, I am not in any way saying that I am now convinced that he's a good defender, or that I'd like to see him play more shortstop or anything like that. But what I am saying is I'm going to probably make an effort to start talking about what bothers me about his defense in a way that focuses less on my aesthetic preferences for how a shortstop should play, which is, like Derek Jeter, just make every play on the balls you get to. Like, you know, Dansby Swanson would be the modern example. I'm going to get flack for that, but, like, people who want to give me flack, you know what I'm saying. I would rather see a guy aesthetically who makes every play on every ball he gets to than a guy who gets to a bunch of balls and adds value in that way, doesn't necessarily make those plays, and then uses that value to make up for what he's costing you by not making routine plays. I'm going to try to have my criticism focus less on that, because I'm willing to believe that that aesthetic preference is actually not calibrated to runs in the way that I thought it was.
Yeah, and none of this is in a vacuum, too. So, you know, when that happens, everybody grounded into a double play, like, it's frustrating.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's
exactly.
Yeah, you know, we don't turn on the pod after the week of games and say, okay, today we're going to evaluate just IKF's defense. Like, it's just, you know, let's talk about the sum total. So, yeah, but I think that's like a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge to everyone watching baseball because these metrics are getting to a point where you can do that. And it's incumbent upon us who talk about them to, like, the stupidest thing that I thought happened last year was when, you know, IKF himself or Boone or someone said, you know, he rates well in DRS and that's why we like him. Because, yeah, while that can be true, that's you're not providing, not that it's his job to, but I think you're throwing out numbers and you're just making a ranking and you're not really explaining why, like, that statistic shows why you like him more. And so people get frustrated and, you know, the cycle continues. And again, it's not Aaron Boone's job to explain to us why, you know, why DRS rates him better. But I think we can do that. And, you know, with these great new metrics that are being created and will continue to be created, I think it's even easier. And I look forward to watching IKF, you know, play shortstop for the Rockies and comment on his defense while he's in Colorado.
Exactly. And Germán Márquez will be a great Yankee. So Whipple, something else that happened since our last podcast and today is I started to get into statistical analysis in R, and then I started to post the graphs I was making and my statistical findings on Twitter to get people angry. So
thank God this season started.
A few things that I found in 2022 for individual hitters, contact rate explained less than 1% of the variability in WRC plus. In postseasons from 2017 to 2022, regular season contact rate explained less than 1% of the variation in postseason OPS, and the little correlation there was negative. There was a positive correlation between playoff OPS and playoff contact rate, but even then, playoff contact rate explained less than 5% of the variation in playoff OPS. And there is a legitimate criticism of that analysis that basically says, playoff sample sizes are so small, especially because you have to split seasons, that you're not going to find something that is correlated at any level of significance that we would care about with like anything else, as long as all your stats are postseason. And I'm willing to buy that, but like, the team with the highest postseason OPS from 2017 to 2022 had one of like the 10 lowest contact rates of any postseason team in that time that played at least three games. So, and it was the 2020 Yankees. So, it's been bothering people, but I am going to keep doing stuff like that, especially when the findings A, serve my narrative, and B, prove the people who annoy me wrong.
Oh, jeez. This is why I got to come in and start talking about baseball and law so I can distract from baseball and statistics. No, I mean, I'll clear out to you for the statistics R corner, but, you know, I'm sure we'll have this debate plenty of times through the season, but the postseason's it's a home runs game. Like, the reason the Yankees didn't win the World Series, didn't win the ALCS, is because aside from Harrison Bader and Anthony Rizzo, people stopped hitting home runs after the ALDS. I mean,
also the laws of physics.
Yeah, also the stupid roof at Minute Maid Park. But, yeah, we had this podcast debate. Look at the ALDS. The Guardians essentially needed two miracles to make that a five-game series, and that was your contact team. And the reason I go back to it, the reason the Yankees lost, I know we differ about could they have beaten the Astros, could they not have beaten the Astros. It's because guys were, you know, they had too many below average players in that lineup who weren't making any kind of contact, weren't hitting home runs. Like, if Josh Donaldson had hit a few singles, it wouldn't have made a difference. You needed Aaron Judge to hit home runs. You needed Giancarlo Stanton to hit home runs. The reason DJ LeMahieu was so good is because he's a high average hitter who also hits doubles and for power. He's not a singles hitter. And the reason Andrew Benintendi was getting better, and, you know, I'll take the victory lap on that, but it's not because, like I said,
yeah, you know, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome to take the victory lap on Andrew Benintendi, because he became valuable in exactly the way that he hadn't been prior.
Right. And my point was not that he was going to keep sustaining his high BABIP. It was that he was going to tap into that power. So,
yes. And you were right. You were right about that. I have no idea what gave you that confidence, but you were absolutely right about it.
His career. Okay. Well, he's gone.
We don't need to rehash that.
But yeah.
Isn't it amazing that Andrew Benintendi is the holder of the richest contract in Chicago White Sox history?
That's mind boggling. And good for
$75 million.
Good for them. I don't know.
$75 million.
I was on the Benintendi heel turn, as you know. I turned from a.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think there's a difference between a half season rental and a 5-year contract. And. We'll talk,
totally.
Yeah, I am not sorry that the Yankees don't have it. But the point is, in all of our analyses, I think the thing we can agree on is that singles aren't winning ball games. Home runs are winning ball games. And look at the Yankee success. Ask the Cleveland Guardians. Look at the Yankee success in the last 5 years. And look at their win total correlated to how many home runs they hit in that season. And it's pretty damn close. So
it
I look
sure
forward to
is.
More statistics and our analyses from you.
Oh, you'll get it. So Whipple, because it's still the off season, we're doing a draft. But this time, now that players have started reporting to camp, it is a draft of things we are excited about for the upcoming season.
Woo.
And I think my list is pretty unique, so I don't have any gripe with giving you the first pick.
Okay. I'm intimidated. I thought my list was kind of generic, but... I'll take the first pick. This is things we're excited about. Things I am excited about. I think there's a thing that everyone's excited about. He's probably the largest thing on the Yankees, but that's not what I am excited about. Because, as is well established, my favorite player, the 2023 American League Cy Young Award winner, future winner in my opinion, Gerrit Cole is going to be severely underrated going into this year. And I think I just love,
he already is.
As you love, I love a player who's being counted out. And I'm sure Gleyber Torres is going to be somewhere in this conversation for you because that's your corner. I clear out for you. But today I was just thinking, you know, we're 45 days from opening day and number 45, the elite Sergio Mitre and also Gerrit Cole. Sergio Mitre, not a great guy. But Gerrit Cole's a great
guy.
Not
a great guy.
Gerrit Cole led the league in strikeouts and home runs. And basically the only thing Gerrit Cole did poorly last year was give up home runs. I mean, giving up 33 home runs and giving up basically a home run in September, I guess the biggest thing I found, in September, giving up 2.5 home runs per 9 innings, which was a home run higher than his season rate. When we have reason to suspect the balls were being juiced for Aaron Judge related purposes. And again, this sounds like me making excuses, but Gerrit Cole struck out 257 batters last year. Every single number in his career is basically in line with his career averages. Strikeout per walk rate, strikeout per nine. He walked about the same as his career rate. His giving up the same amount of contact as his career. Nothing stands out except for the home runs. And Gerrit Cole's career is that of a Cy Young Award caliber pitcher. One of the best pitchers in the league. One pitcher who was at a lot of moments last year every bit as good as Yankees fans want him to be. In the playoffs, he saved their season in game 4. And I'm just like, I'm ready for the Gerrit Cole, you know, put it all together as a Yankee campaign because it's so much closer than people think. I mean, this guy is a horse. He's going to pitch 200 innings. He's going to strike out over 250 guys. It's just a question of the home runs because everything else was the same last year. I mean, think about his September starts. He was giving up like 3 hits a game, 4 hits a game, and like 3 of them are home runs. I'm not exaggerating. Yeah. It's going to be Gerrit Cole's year, and everyone's excited for Carlos Rodon in that rotation, and I am too, but, you know, Gerrit Cole is not going to be anywhere. He wasn't on the top 10 list of pitchers in Major League Baseball. He's not going to be anywhere in Cy Young predictors. He's not going to be anywhere in the conversation for even, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as say he could be in the MVP running, but when Garrett Cole is good,
yeah,
like,
I don't know if that happens anymore.
Let's not forget how good he is. Like, let's go back to 2021 in the first 2-3 months. Let's go to the middle portion of this year. It's literally all about the home runs, and I'm not saying that he's going to entirely fix it, but it really doesn't take much for him to bring that number down and everything else holding the same. I'm ready for it. That is the thing about this Yankees team that, you know, I think Aaron Judge probably will step back a little bit. I'm not so sure about the health of everyone, but I am just so confident that this is Garrett Cole's put it all together in pinstripes here.
So Garrett Cole is the only pitcher in Major League Baseball in 2021 or 2022 to strike out at least 255 batters. I don't even know who the next closest is, but the guy's ridiculously good. He's in fact the only player in either of the last two seasons to strike out at least 250 batters. The point that you made about home run per fly ball is a good one. We know that Garrett Cole is prone to giving up the homer, but Garrett Cole gave up 33 home runs in 33 starts in 200 innings in 2022 and was like written off as an awful pitcher. Robbie Ray gave up 33 home runs in 32 starts, 193 innings in 2021 and won the Cy Young. Like, even if Garrett Cole comes back and gives up 33 home runs in 200 innings again, he could be absolutely elite. I agree that we should expect him to have better luck on fly balls than he did, and I don't think he's going to come out and give up back-to-back-to-back home runs against the Twins like he did, you know, in that one start that we inexplicably didn't talk about on our Weirdest Games episode. But his xFIP was lower than it was in 2021, yep. And it was what? 0.7 runs lower than his FIP. Like, Garrett Cole is obviously bound for resurgence.
Yeah, Garrett Cole was fourth in the league in xFIP. Yeah. I mean, that's the stat that normalizes home runs. And Garrett Cole with the 2.77 xFIP, basically, you know, a hair away from being third in the league. I mean, that's, you know, call it what you will, but like, and people don't want to make excuses. I get it. But he was getting unlucky with the potential juice balls. And, you know, even if it's not even the juice balls, just a normalization of luck will have him right back in, you know. In 2021, he finished second in the Cy Young Award. So it's not even that long ago we have to go back to him being a top of the league pitcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that might.
That's cheddar. That's gas.
That's gas. And that's probably not everyone's most anticipated thing, but you gave me the first pick, and that's my most anticipated thing. So deal with it, America.
So I love that. I had a feeling that's where you were going. I had Garrett Cole somewhere on my list, and I was going to make a similar point, but I figured, it was better coming from you. The thing that I'm most excited for this season is lefty Seve and righty Seve. So righty Seve is obviously Luis Severino, that really good right-handed pitcher who's still only 29 years old, who is... or not even quite 29 years old. He will be when the season starts. Who has been an ace for the Yankees every time he's been healthy. He had a 3.18 ERA last year, even though he was probably getting a little bit unlucky too. Who just posted like his highest or second highest like full season ground ball rate. There's a lot to be excited about with Luis Severino. I'm just so excited that he's healthy. It's well documented that he is, you know, one of my favorite players, certainly probably my favorite pitcher on the team. And I love watching him pitch. I love his style of pitching. I love his energy. I love the T-Rex stomp when he's coming off the mound. I think Luis Severino is a pleasure to watch. And I'm just really excited to see him have what I anticipate will be another great season this year. But the Yankees got lefty Luis Severino. over the offseason, and that's Carlos Rodon. You know, a guy who's similarly electric, both with respect to the stuff and the emotion he shows on the mound, you know, can run it up there with the velocity, is, you know, going to be a reasonably high strikeout guy, is just super intense. They both obviously have the, you know, the unfortunate injury connection and have at times in their careers struggled to stay healthy. I think last year with Seve, it was really just the Yankees being cautious. But being able, first of all, the Yankees are going to have the best pitcher in the league in Gerrit Cole as their number one starter. And being able to run out Carlos Rodon and Luis Severino after him is insane. I mean, you come up against those guys in a playoff series and, like, just go home. It's
just go home.
it's so exciting to me that like the Yankees got a guy who is this good, but also who is going to be as fun to watch as Carlos Rodon. Like, as much as I love Gerrit Cole, which is not as much as you love Gerrit Cole, and as much emotion as he'll like occasionally show, watching Gerrit Cole even in like the ninth inning of a complete game two-hitter is kind of like watching someone's dad who can just apparently throw 100 miles an hour. And watching Carlos Rodon or Luis Severino is like if the coolest guy in the world could throw 97. And I just think that's awesome, and I'm really excited for him to pitch for the Yankees.
Yeah, I absolutely love that comparison. This team's got some badass pitching, and the fact that
the fact that
Luis Severino is back in the middle of it just makes me so happy. I'm just looking at my Luis Severino poster from when he was came back against the Rangers and his comeback in 2021. Like, we were just so fired up that he made it back for that, and then for him,
how could you not
for him to come back last year, be that good, and just be ready to go this year? Like, you've said enough for that. I think I want to talk about Carlos Rodon just for a second, because, you know, we talked about all the predictive metrics with Gerrit Cole, how he's going to bounce back. Here's a guy who does not have to bounce back because he is already that good, and a guy who, you know, we talk about xFIP and potentially if home runs normalize, Carlos Rodon just led the whole Major League Baseball in regular FIP. Nothing needs to be normalized to show how good he was. The fact that he led Major League Baseball in strikeouts per nine innings and, you know, pitch probably his best complete season. I think some people will say that, oh, you know, it's, he can't sustain that injury luck. But I think the Yankees know what they're doing with pitching. And the fact is that they would not have signed this guy if they didn't realize there was a complete mechanical change that has allowed him to pitch much better in the last 2 years, and confidence that he's going to continue to do so at a sustainable rate for, you know, maybe not 200 innings a year, but enough innings for them to feel comfortable with the investment. I think we have entered the age of baseball where it doesn't make as much sense to look at what a pitcher has done versus what a team can help him to do and help him to unlock. I just think, especially with the Yankees, we're in the create a pitcher era, and they've already got a pitcher who's recreated himself, and I just have zero doubt in my mind. Like, I'm just so excited to see that pairing with, because this is probably, I mean, when Gerrit Cole signed with the Yankees, the Matt Blake era was just beginning. So this is probably with this newly functional pitching redevelopment that they've gone through in the last few years. This is the best pitcher that has directly entered the pitching lab and who's already a finished product. Yeah. And I just think there's another level he could get to. And, you know, Cole and Rodon is the best pair of aces the Yankees have had in at least a decade, if not longer. So just so excited to see. I mean, you go to a Yankees game in 2023 and there's a 60% chance you're going to see one of the three guys we just talked about. Like, I'm going. I'll tell you that much. I'm going to some games.
That's pretty cool. All right. Is this a snake draft or are we straight up alternating?
I think we got to go snake because we did it last time. So.
Okay. So with my second pick, I'm going with the trade, with the stipulation that it cannot involve Gleyber Torres. So the trade, as we know, is the trade that nobody sees coming that happens sometime shortly before the beginning of the season that really shakes things up for how that season will go. So, you know, 20 or it's sometimes not a trade. It's been a trade mostly recently, but, you know, in 2018, Neil Walker was a late addition, and then they traded away Jake Cave and got Luis Gil. In 2019, obviously you had the Mike Tauchman trade, you know, brought him in late in spring training. Last year's the trade really sucked, but there still was one. And especially with the news that Nestor's got something going on with his hamstring, even though, you know, it's only February 13th and it's not being talked about as super serious, I think the trade is going to happen, whether it's for a pitcher or for an outfielder. I'm still not sure. But the trade is coming, and it's going to be, you know, fodder for a lot of discussion whenever it does. And it's, I think, my most immediate item that's on this list, but I'm excited for the trade.
I commend you for having the courage to say this when, you know, given what happened last year and given the fact that Gleyber Torres realistically could be this trade.
They can't trade away Gary Sanchez again. And
true.
Trading away Gleyber Torres would be bad. It would not be as bad for me personally as when they traded away Gary Sanchez. And I'm confident they won't do it because we know the Yankees really like the baseball prospectus deserved runs prevented statistic, and Gleyber Torres is one of the best second basemen by that.
These are all facts, and nothing was as sad as when I had to tell you last year that trade happened and
ruined my life.
They can't trade Gary Sanchez again, and you know, this has been a really weird offseason because I don't think there's been a single trade, right? Or unless I'm missing something, there have been no trades from the Yankees 40-man roster. Maybe some like minor guys, but is that correct?
Yeah, I believe that. I can't think of it. Certainly not anyone on the 40-man I can think of.
And I think that's so wild considering where we came into the offseason. I think there was just five guys that, you know, we could have picked from where we assumed they were gone. And I still think that at least one or two of those guys will be gone. I continue to refuse to believe that Aaron Hicks is going to be starting on opening day with this team.
Yeah.
A little less confident about that now, but I'm still, that is, as I said, like, I just don't think they're going to let it get to that point, but it could be for an outfielder. It could be for a pitcher. Brian Cashman works in darkness. And you know, most of the time it's something you did not see coming. And the thing is, you know, you don't have to trade for a pitcher, but you kind of do have to do something about the offense because there just is, especially in the infield, there's kind of a glut. And I hope Aaron Hicks will get traded, but the backup option of IKF getting traded to clear out the way for Peraza is not too bad of a consolation prize, in my opinion.
Would be more than fine.
So I'm always intrigued. I think last year's trade deadline, if disappointing at the end, was certainly intriguing. Cannot say it wasn't intriguing, given the amount of trades that happened. That's the nicest thing I think you would say about it.
It was definitely intriguing. That's for sure.
Okay, so kick it back to me for pick number four.
For two picks.
So my pick number four is, you did the trade, I am doing the kids, because the Yankees farm system has, in the last few years, I think, been, since Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar and Clint Frazier and everyone graduated with varying amounts of success, the Yankees farm system has been a project. And I think originally some of the, I would say some of the hardest or the worst parts of 2019, which turned into the best parts, was that they really didn't have prospects at the upper minors who could step in. And, you know, that turned into the next man up team, but that came back to bite them because they just didn't have those prospects and the next man up guys fizzled out. So for a while, they were a little high and dry with impact guys in the upper end of the minors. And we talked last year about the fact that that was changing. These guys, they had a lot of talent in single A, double A, and eventually up into triple A, where you had Cabrera and Peraza specifically, were able to come in and play pretty big roles, especially Cabrera down the stretch. And I think that was only the beginning, because while Cabrera is definitely a mainstay on this team, you now have Oswald Peraza with a very, very real, if not, you know, favorite chance to win the shortstop job. You have Anthony Volpe, who has taken a superhuman leap in the last 2 years and become one of the top consensus prospects in baseball. First pitcher or player in the minors to hit 20 home runs and steal 50 bases since Andrew Jones. So he, you know,
is
all
that
those,
guy any good?
He might be a Hall of Famer one day. But we, you know, he might have started off a little rough last year, but he really turned his season around, and he is going to make his major league debut next year, and we'll see how quickly that comes. And then, you know, I think one of your favorite guys to talk about online is Jason Dominguez, who went from being extremely overrated to extremely underrated. As prospect evaluations go, people always want everyone to be the next Mickey Mantle or Mike Trout, or they're a bust. And guys are going to fall probably in the middle of that. And Dominguez is going to be a really good player. I think the more I read about him, the more I see him. You know, it's easy to be impressed by the tools of a young kid, but he's now knocking on the upper levels in the minors as a 20-year-old and really crushed it at Double A last year. I mean, it's not inconceivable he also could be in the majors at some point this year. I think those three guys, at least for a cup of coffee at the end of the year, it's possible.
It's not impossible, but I will say
it's not a Volpe Peraza level, but it's possible.
I will say, and I think it's important in the context of this discussion to level set for this. Jason Dominguez just turned 20 years old. Since 2018, only 23 players have gotten 100 or more plate appearances in the majors before the end of their age 21 seasons. So if Jason Dominguez doesn't play an inning in the major leagues this year, gets called up in like August of next year and plays in like 25 games, he will join that list and he'll be like one of 30 guys on it. And that list has its up and downs, like, you know, Soto, Acuna, Wander, Tatis, Devers, J-Rod, all very good. But Joe Adell is on that list. CJ Abrams, Jared Kelnick, Luis Garcia, the hitter, Leody Taveras, Isak Paredes, Riley Green, and some of the very good players who are on this list weren't actually good as 20 or 21 year olds. Like Dylan Carlson had a 68 WRC plus. Devers was below average before he turned 21. Before he finished his age 21 season. So, yes, Dominguez could feasibly, conceivably get a cup of coffee this year, but even if Jason Dominguez doesn't play until after the 2024 All-Star break, he will still be a phenomenally young player in recent Major League history. I just want everyone to understand that. Jason Dominguez is a very good minor league baseball player. You probably overrated him before. You probably are underrating him now. There is a lot to like there. He is a consensus top 100 prospect, and even if he doesn't play until after the 2024 All-Star break, he will still have arrived early. I want everyone to understand that.
Yeah, but this is the draft where we get excited about things. We don't.
Okay, well, I'm excited for the end of 2024 when Jason Dominguez comes up and helps the Yankees repeat as World Series champions.
Good answer. My point, you're absolutely right. I think my point was that he is a fast riser and he can make an impact sooner rather than later, given his age. And I think what excites me is you have those guys. You know, you have guys who could help in the infield. Then you have guys, you know, this farm system now is having some depth. It's starting to build out its depth. You have Austin Wells, who could conceivably contribute, you know, as a catcher and outfielder in the near future. You have Everson Pereira, who's working his way up the system. You have Spencer Jones, who in a few years could be a really impressive prospect. Like, these are obviously all best case scenarios. Not all of these guys are going to pan out, but this is
Aaron Judge, Jason Dominguez, Spencer Jones outfield is going to be so sick.
It's going to be awesome. And I mean, you know, we are Yankees fans, so we're going to be optimistic about everything, but these players, you know, I caution everyone not to be, you know, not to have the mindset, well, the last group of guys minus Judge largely flamed out, because that's not really true. But also, that's not how prospects work. And the Yankees have improved a lot in your player evaluations, player development in the last 5 years. And there's no reason to think that this group of players is going to be, you know, as well, I don't know what we can think about them, but we can be excited about them. And there's great pitching prospects that are basically being developed out of nowhere. The Yankees right now have identified that they can essentially create pitchers and they have a really stable high-end upper minors crop of good young hitters, and that's something to be excited about. I think that's going to be a huge part of where this team goes in the next few years, and I think this year is really going to be the first year we see these guys start to hit the majors and hopefully really contribute to this team's success. So I'm super excited for whatever happens. Yeah.
No, there's a ton to be excited about with the kids. I think, I see Oswaldo Cabrera as having the potential to have a really good year. I'm interested to see how he handles being used in what will probably be a true utility role. One thing that I think the Yankees did last year that was really good for him was they played him where they played him pretty consistently. Like, when Bader was hurt, Cabrera was darn near the everyday right fielder. And I think that probably was a big boon to his development. But, man, like, the way we saw his power develop later in the year, the fact that even though he was bad in the playoffs, he, like, looked comfortable. He hit that sick home run in Cleveland. He had some trouble in left field, whatever. I think his bat from the right side is going to look a lot better with some more major league experience. Like, I feel like we saw a lot that we liked from Cabrera, but we didn't see him. Like, I don't know if we even saw flashes of his ceiling, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. Peraza, I think, I'm worried that people on Twitter are overrating Peraza. Like, I don't know if you're seeing this, but I feel like I see a lot of tweets that say, like, I'd hit Peraza at the top of the lineup. I think he's going to hit 290 with 18 home runs. Like, dude, if Oswald Peraza hits, like, 265 with 12 home runs and plays the level of defense that he's capable of playing, the Yankees have, like, probably a 3.5 WAR player at shortstop, and, like, they're set. Mm-hmm. Like, Oswald Peraza does not need to do anything that almost even resembles what he did from a slash line perspective after he came up to be, like, really valuable. And I'm worried that people are going to be disappointed even if he has what objectively would be an extremely good season. And then, yeah, to your point, how can you not be excited about Anthony Volpe? Whether it's, you know, May, whether it's August, whenever it is that he comes up, like, that's going to be one of the most watched things. It's you know... We saw it with Gleyber even in 2017 before he got hurt. They were talking about, like, how he needed to come up and play third base to replace Chase Headley, who was really struggling at the beginning of the year. Like, I feel like we almost forget what it's like, even with all the clamoring for Cabrera and Peraza last year, to have, like, a guy of this caliber, mm-hmm. Get ready. And we'll see. He's taking, like, what, 10 at-bats in AAA or no at-bats in AAA? Like, Volpe might need some time to develop, but it's going to be so exciting when we really feel like he's knocking on the door.
Yeah, the Yankees consider AAA. I think other teams like to skip guys past AAA. The Yankees definitely want to run their guys through AAA. Peraza's done that. He's ready for the majors. Volpe hasn't. He might be ready for the majors, but I think that's just how the Yankees operate. And in the long run, it probably benefits them. I think the last thing I'll say is that, you know, the first time the Baby Bombers happened, it turned into Aaron Judge as the MVP world beater and, you know, Gleyber Torres in the middle and a bunch of guys who didn't live up to expectations. I think let's all expect all of these guys to probably be in the Gleyber Torres middle area, because you'll be excited if they're more than that, and they probably will, you know, they probably will be around that level, and that means they're really good players who are going to be on a really good team contributing. I don't want Aaron Judge's success to throw this off, because, like you said, everyone was hyped for Gleyber. People were not like that for Judge. He was not supposed to be like that.
Yeah, and just one correction. Volpe played 22 games in AAA this past season. He had not played a game in AA before the beginning of last year. So just a correction on what I was saying there.
Not inconceivable he skips it, but I think he'll be up next year, but not at the beginning. I'll take my next pick, since we probably should speed this along. So my next pick is somehow, you know, a guy who I didn't think I was going to pick a guy who batted 250, 294, 356 for last year, who but somehow still put up a win and a half, but is I think, going to be a really good baseball player for the Yankees, and that's Harrison Bader. And I'm just really excited to see a full season of Harrison Bader. I think people across the board were so wrong on him. I think everybody is like collectively admitting
I was like extremely wrong about Harrison Bader.
I think I was less wrong about him, and that was only because I was like neutral. I definitely was like, I wasn't high on him, but I think it was you were either neutral or you were like very down. And that's because we all love Jordan Montgomery. But Harrison Bader this year is projected to Harrison Bader is projected through nope, that's Carlos Rodon.
Zips loves him.
Yes. I was looking at Zips and Steamer, and Harrison Bader through Steamer is about a 3-win player. Harrison Bader and Zips is about a 3.5-win player. He, on both projections, his WRC plus is over 100. Zips, it's over 110. And that's not even, you know, the WAR is counting the defense, but just look at the offense. And for him to hit like that and then to take some of probably the best center field defense in the league, that's good enough. But if we saw something in the playoffs that he unlocked to get anywhere close to that level, if there was any kind of swing change or just anything that might be different than he was hitting with St. Louis in terms of his approach, I mean, like, there is an upper level here that it doesn't take much offensively for him to climb into the stratosphere in terms of his WAR, just because his defense is so good. And the Yankees really needed a center fielder last year, and Aaron Judge was able to do that. But I think they would have been in such a tough position this offseason because they would have been back to needing a center fielder, and Aaron Judge, they don't want to be a long-term center fielder. The fact that they had Bader going into the offseason was just such a relief to not have that be another area of concern, because they would have basically been down a whole outfield. I think slotting him in, and you know, maybe they extend him, maybe they don't, but for 2023, I think he could be a sneaky difference maker, a lot of fun to watch, and one of the best defensive center fielders they've had out there in a while.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited about. You know, Harrison Bader's only real bad offensive seasons are 2019 and last year. And if he hits like the player he was in 2018 or 2021, he's automatically 3 wins just from the defense. And then, yeah, as you said, if he can be a slightly above average hitter, 105 to 110, you know, Zips has him all the way up to 111 WRC plus guy, that would be huge. And then Zips loves him so much that in their depth chart projection, where he gets 560 plate appearances, he's a 4.6 win player. Like, that's where the defense is just doing the work. I don't know that he'll get 560 plate appearances. That would be a career high for him by a lot. But, you know, the version of Harrison Bader that plays elite defense for 120 to 130 games is probably a 3-win player, maybe a little more. And that's pretty exciting. And I can get excited about that pretty easily.
Yeah, the version of Harrison Bader that has a 1262 OPS might not be real, but you know what? Like I said, if he gets anywhere above that like base projection for him, I mean, you're gonna be looking at a guy who's could be an all-star.
Yeah. So I think a lot to like there. Giancarlo Stanton is my next pick. Giancarlo Stanton had a higher ex-WOBA than Vlad Guerrero Jr. last year. Giancarlo Stanton's ex-WOBA was 351. Vlad's was 348. Vlad's WOBA was 351. And Vlad had a 132 WRC+. Giancarlo Stanton's ex-WOBA was 351. His WOBA was 327. He had a 115 WRC+. Giancarlo Stanton's 351 ex-WOBA was the lowest that he'd posted since 2018, when he was a 128 WRC plus hitter. He doesn't need to change anything about his batted ball profile, his walk rate, anything. He just needs to not have remarkably bad luck, and he will be immediately 25 or 30% above average next year. I think, and that's where all his projections are, because his ex-WOBA is like completely buoyed by his exit velocity, and that's not going anywhere. He hits the ball harder than anyone's ever hit the ball. Giancarlo Stanton is an easy pick to have a resurgent season. I think if that's not what you're expecting from him, you're wrong. He's going to be very good. If he plays 120 games, I guarantee he will hit almost 30 home runs. If he plays 130 games, I guarantee he will hit 30 home runs. He's like plugging in the version of Giancarlo Stanton that just has normal batted ball luck into this lineup takes a lot of the pressure off of, like, oh, well, Aaron Judge isn't going to have 11.5 war again, or, oh, well, you're not going to get, you know, 120 Babe Ruth plate appearances from Matt Carpenter. Like, I don't care, because Giancarlo Stanton isn't going to suck. Like, we saw him be very good in the first half of last year. I don't know what was going on in the second half, but Giancarlo Stanton's going to be really good next year, and we should all be really excited about it. And watching him just hit lasers out of stadiums is sick, and I'm excited to see more of it.
Yeah, Giancarlo Stanton last year, highest ISO as a Yankee. I mean, he was hitting the home runs, and like you said, the normal batted ball luck, I think, is going to automatically lead him to a comeback season. What was the most fun part of 2021, because there really wasn't that much fun in that year, it was watching what Judge and Stanton fully loaded, locked in together. And, you know, Aaron Judge, we love Aaron Judge, and when he's on a tear, it's so much fun to watch, but there's nothing like watching Stanton go on a tear. I mean, the Fenway series from that September is probably like the single most dominant performance by one hitter against a team in a series
remarkable
that I can remember in a while. It's just nothing like it. And like you said, it takes pressure off of Judge. It's that other weapon in a way that no one else in this lineup can be. And it's just so close to actually happening. I think that's we're not asking for anything crazy here. I mean, last year in his down year, he had all the, like you said, all the statistics except for the batted ball luck. And it's going to happen. And, you know, he's going to get primarily DH for better or worse. And hopefully that keeps him healthy, because he is, I mean, he might be one of the most important guys in this lineup.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that.
I think there's, yeah. Well, I'll save my other comment on that, because I have one other player I might discuss. But I think in terms of impact, no one is going to make more of an impact, you know, like when he's not in the lineup versus when he's in the lineup. I think other guys help performance-wise, but you feel when Giancarlo Stanton is in the lineup and hot, and that you can't say that about anyone else outside of Judge.
Yeah, no, when he is tearing the cover off the ball and there's nothing anyone can do, it's one of the coolest things in baseball. Getting to my fourth pick, I am excited for the Yankees to beat the ever-living crap out of the Houston Astros, because they stop having the lowest home run per fly ball rate in the world. And this is backed up by statistics. So as we were talking about XFIP earlier, it's broadly agreed upon that pitchers are not exerting control over whether or not fly balls become home runs. Like, pitchers are not good at managing quality of contact. They're good at managing launch angle, which is why you have ground ball pitchers and fly ball pitchers, but they are not good at managing quality of contact, broadly speaking. 18 pitching staffs in the last 10 major league seasons have posted a home run per fly ball of 9.3% or lower. 17 of those seasons were either 2013, which 5 teams did that, or 2014, which 12 teams did that. So going into 2022, it hadn't happened in like 8 seasons. The 18th team was the 2022 Houston Astros, and I promise they will not do it again, because having the lowest home run per fly ball in the entire league in almost a decade is not a skill. Their pitching staff is going to regress, and their pitching staff is going to regress by enough that they will not, in combination with the more balanced schedule, I'm willing to say they will not win 106 games again. I'm willing to say that they're in jeopardy of not being the one seed in the American League. And I'm willing to say that all this BS nonsense about, oh, the Yankees didn't close the gap enough with the Astros, doesn't account for the fact that the Astros had one of the luckiest pitching seasons that we've seen in ages last year. And that accounts for a lot of what made them good. The Astros had like 4 relievers with 1.4 or more Fangraphs WAR. Only like 2 guys in the last 5 back-to-back-to-back-to-back seasons have posted consecutive seasons, one year after the next, of 1.4 Fangraphs WAR or more. And none of them are the guys the Astros have. So the Astros pitching regression is going to be awesome. The Yankees are going to be even better than they were last year. And the Yankees are going to beat the crap out of the Astros. And that's one of the top five things I'm excited for about next year.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add to that because I think the numbers speak for themselves. But I just think everyone who has written this team off needs to look in the mirror and ask yourself why you're doing it, because if it's about some, you know, self-catharsis or protecting yourself from being hurt, you're not having a very good time. And if it's about the numbers, you're not looking at the numbers. I just don't know why people think that that has any relevance when it's so clear based on what you said that this team is going to get worse. Actually, let me talk about my number 8 pick, because I think it actually plays into this. My 4th pick. So I want to talk a little bit about the balanced schedule, because I'm really excited for the balanced schedule. You just mentioned it's going to harm the Astros because they're going to be facing more teams. They're not going to get to beat up on the soft American League West teams as frequently as they did. They're going to have to face more teams from around the league, and the odds are that's probably going to hurt their pitching statistics. It's going to hurt just their overall capability in general. Meanwhile, the Yankees are going to be spared from facing the Red Sox, the Rays, and the Blue Jays in 2 extra series per year. So 6 games total, about 18 or 19 games against some of the best teams in the league. And you know what they get to replace those with? A bunch of National League games that are probably going to be much easier for them than these schedule, you know, pits that we see. We see the Tampa, Toronto, Boston road trips. Those are probably a thing of the past. And you know what? It's about time that teams like the Astros and the Guardians can, you know, hide in their divisions and their castles and get to beat up on the Tigers and the Royals and the Athletics while the Yankees go out here, suffer every single week, basically, and still come out with a better record and, you know, mostly better than these teams for the most part in the regular season. It's going to look a lot different. I don't know how quickly those results are going to show up, but it's so clear to me that it's going to, you know, which teams it's going to help and which teams it's going to hurt. And I'm excited for the Yankees to finally get, you know, it's trending towards baseball, basically, you know, every team playing the same amount of games versus the same teams. And I don't really know if I love that. I like division races. I like the rivalries, but I think this is a good compromise. I mean, I think you have some of both elements there. And furthermore, I think it's really fun for, you know, me as a Yankees fan in the Washington, D.C. area to say, hey, I know once every 2 years the Yankees are going to come visit. If you're a Colorado Yankees fan, if you're a Cincinnati Yankees fan, you're going to get to see the Yankees in 2023, and then you'll know every 2 years you're going to get to see them. That's really cool for just, like, growing the game purposes, and I'm all for that. But specifically for win totals, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if it wasn't as much as people are thinking it's going to help. But I also wouldn't be shocked if it drastically helps. Like, if the Yankees are suddenly 105 game winners because of that, maybe that's too much. But also, you know, look at the games they're probably, you know, taking out games that they probably would have gone 500 in, and they're replacing them with a large part much easier games. And that's not going to be the same every year. But for the composition of the American League and National League right now, I think that's largely true. I'm excited to see how it harms the Astros and Guardians and so on, and helps the Yankees.
Yeah, there's a good article, or a good 2 articles that Rob Maines did on Baseball Prospectus about how good we should expect 2023 to be for the American League East, given how good they were last year and the fact that the schedule should get easier because, as you said, they're going to play fewer games against American League East teams. And then also how bad we should expect the Central divisions, both of which kind of have historically made hay from playing, you know, the bad teams that are within their divisions. He is not sold in those articles that things are going to get all that much worse for the AL West, but he is sold that things are going to get better for the AL East. So you can imagine last year, if the Yankees had played to their Pythagorean record, they would have won 106 games. And then, which is what the Astros won. And then Mains projects that it's worth 2.4 wins to have the more balanced schedule. So there you go. Yankees are the one seed in the in the American League. Like, it's easy to get yourself there. And I think the balanced schedule will definitely be helpful for the Yankees in that regard. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest schedule change we've had in baseball for some time. So I'm definitely intrigued, if nothing else. More intrigued than I think the trade deadline was intriguing last year. Two different uses of the word.
Definitely. All right, your final pick.
All right, so my final pick, we talked about Giancarlo Stanton, his importance to the lineup. I think, you know, I said, you feel Giancarlo Stanton's impact. But I think there's two guys, both veterans, and both guys who might be more important, might be less important, but you can't deny that the success of the 2023 New York Yankees runs through DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo, because we know what Judge and Stanton can do, power righty bats. But starting with Anthony Rizzo, the Yankees have one legitimately star lefty, maybe not superstar, but Anthony Rizzo as a first baseman who can hit 30 home runs, have a WRC plus over 120 and play gold glove defense is just such a valuable player for this mostly righty lineup. And I know lineup balance might be overrated, might be properly rated, but the Yankees need a power lefty bat in Yankee Stadium. And it's just funny considering when they traded for Gallo and Rizzo 2 years ago, I think everyone fixated on Joey Gallo and Rizzo was kind of the afterthought. And it now look at Rizzo, who is, was the jewel of that trade deadline and is partially probably one of the most significant reasons that Aaron Judge may or may not be back, non-monetary reasons. And furthermore, with the new limitations on the shifts, again, something we don't directly know the impact of, but it's not going to hurt Anthony Rizzo to have guys not shifting on him. And I'm excited to see how that plays out. But even if it doesn't impact that much, the player that Anthony Rizzo was in 2022 is one of the main reasons that team was so successful. And in the middle of that lineup with Judge and Stanton, he is just such a tremendously valuable piece. And the other guy, when both of these guys had injury issues at the end of the year, that's when that lineup, including in addition to Stanton, that's when that lineup got a little thin. But I think DJ LeMahieu is also kind of being slept on, because if he is healthy, up until August 7th last year, LeMahieu was batting .288 with a .393 on-base percentage, and he had 12 home runs, but it wasn't really about the power for him. He had more power, but he was hitting at a high average. He was also getting on base at almost a .400 clip, and that's just, that's incredibly valuable for this team because they desperately need a leadoff hitter. I mean, we saw in the playoffs, they did not know who could hit leadoff. It was Glaber should not be hitting leadoff. Harrison Bader should not be hitting leadoff. DJ LeMahieu, as long as he is healthy and as long as he can hit anywhere close to that, is going to be their leadoff hitter. And if
he
not
had a 143 WRC plus in his first 438 plate appearances last year.
And
awesome.
Right. And even his final numbers, I mean, he was down, his OPS was down closer to 700, but his WRC plus was still pretty good relative to the year before. And
yeah, 116, nothing wrong with that.
He was almost,
I'd sign up to for that again.
Yeah, he was almost by Baseball Reference, he was about a 4-win player. By FanGraphs, he was about a 3-win player, but that's still really good. And that does not tell the story of DJ LeMahieu's 2022. And I'm just so excited to watch him play again, because I think he was such a difference maker in the middle stretch of last year. This team really felt it when DJ LeMahieu was not healthy, when Anthony Rizzo was dealing with his back injuries, in addition to Stanton. But I think these two guys, not the superstars that Judge and Stanton might be or the potential impact they might have, but they really are going to round out this lineup. And if they are hitting at 2022 levels when healthy, I mean, this team is, or the lineup is running instead of, two or three deep, you're now five deep or six deep. And especially in LeMahieu's case, he just provides such a threat at the top of that lineup. And I'm just so convinced that there's no reason, if healthy, and obviously a big if, but from all indications, he is healthy, that he can't be that 2022 first half hitter. And that's not 2019 or 2020 LeMahieu, but it's really, really good and not far off at all.
Yeah, so it's actually funny. Through August 7th of last year, DJ LeMahieu had a 143 WRC plus and 3.7 WAR. He finished with a 116 WRC plus and 3 WAR per Fangraphs.
He didn't get a single extra base hit after that August 7th game. Yeah. I mean, his bat was a noodle bat.
Anthony Rizzo had a 143 WRC plus and 2.4 WAR through that game. He finished with a 132 WRC plus and, again, still very good, and 2.4 WAR. So you got negative 0.7 Fangraphs WAR out of Anthony Rizzo and DJ LeMahieu between August 7th and the end of the season. I think we can reasonably assume that the Yankees will get something better out of those guys this year. And, I mean, you nailed it. Like, if you use the Fangraphs or the Zips depth chart adjusted projections, DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo are the fourth and fifth best players on the team by WAR and the third and fifth best players on the team by WRC plus. And the only other guys, you know, in that top five group are Gleyber Torres and Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge. So like we're talking about, our focus is where our focus should be. So yes, I 100% agree with you. The lineup is much more complete with DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo in it playing at their best, and we should be very excited about seeing that again.
And just one other thing, in terms of just pure aesthetics, Anthony Rizzo in April last year was just a demon, and LeMahieu in late June, early July.
Yep.
I mean, when LeMahieu is hot, he is making contact with everything and driving half of it over the wall. So, like, you know, importance-wise, I recognize they are important. This is also a draft of what we're excited about, and those guys can just turn it on, and especially LeMahieu. Yeah. I mean, I think Rizzo, you know, he'll hit some over the porch. He's just a great all-around player. But a hot DJ LeMahieu is, you know, it's like Giancarlo Stanton, but for, like, singles and doubles.
Exactly. So I will make my last pick, which is the last pick of the draft. And it's fitting that it has been on the board until this point because it's something that happens at the end of the season. I'm excited for the Yankees to win the World Series. It's been a while. I've missed it.
Glad they're going to do it. I'm glad for that assurance.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that things are coming together in ways that we should be excited about. No doubt there are good teams in Major League Baseball that are not the Yankees. The Astros are still good. The Mets, I think, are going to be good. The Braves are going to be good. The Phillies just went to the World Series. You can never count out the Dodgers, even though they've been, like, suspiciously inactive. You know, the Padres have made a lot of exciting moves, including extending Yu Darvish until he's 75. There are going to be a lot of good teams in Major League Baseball. And the Yankees will be one of them. And I think the Yankees are going to be very well equipped to win the World Series. When healthy, I think there's an argument they have the best starting staff in baseball. I think there's an even stronger argument that they have the best top three. They have the best bullpen in baseball. They have one of, if not the best lineups in baseball when it's functioning at full strength, and we can reasonably expect that they'll add to it sometime during the season. They are coming into this season stronger than I think they've come into any season in recent memory when you think about the fact that even though Josh Donaldson, Aaron Hicks, and IKF are all on the roster, there is an avenue not to start any of them ever if they don't want to. The bullpen is going to be phenomenal, as I said, as compared to the one that we saw in October. It will have Ron Marinaccio. It will have Tommy Canley. It will not have Aroldis Chapman at all, which I think is awesome. There's just a lot to like, and the team is going to get stronger throughout the year, whether that's with, you know, I don't know how long Nestor will be out, but, you know, he will come back. I think, you know, they'll be gentle with the pitchers in ramping them up. You know, I think we may see some similar caution with DJ LeMahieu. Certainly they'll get some reinforcements from the kids and from Anthony Volpe specifically as the season goes on. It just feels like everything is prepared for there to be just this ramp to greatness that they ride throughout the year. And I don't know, man. I know that I, like, on probably the majority of Yankees Files episodes, I've talked about how either that team, if it's, you know, during the season, or the next year's team, if a season has just ended, is going to win the World Series. But the narrative's not hard to put together when you consider that Buck Showalter doesn't win playoff series, that Justin Verlander isn't on the Astros anymore, that Yuli Gurriel, who I know was bad but murdered the Yankees every time they met in the playoffs, isn't on the Astros anymore. When you consider the way the National League should cannibalize itself, when you consider that the Dodgers don't have Trey Turner anymore, like, you can really easily tell yourself a story about why the Yankees should succeed within their division, why they should succeed within their league, and why they should, you know, succeed in the World Series. And I'm telling you, man, I'm bought in, and I just think this season's going to be an awesome ride from, you know, the first spring training game in a couple weeks all the way through the end of October. I'm really, like, sincerely very excited for it.
Yeah, we got to get Ryan Garcia back to give another motivational speech, but maybe we don't, because that was pretty good.
Exactly.
I don't really have much else to add. I echo all of your statements. I concur, as I to use a legal phrase that I probably already knew, but I also
will
just use again. No, this team, I don't think they're being slept on as much as last year. I think people are pretty aware of how good this team is, but I still think they're being slept on because people are viewing their inability to beat the Astros. Like, everything I see about the Yankees right now is basically saying, did they do enough to beat the Astros? And we won't know for a while, but, you know, this team, like we have said, this team probably had enough to beat the Astros last year, and they got better. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of reasons to think that they can get better still. And a lot of the things we talked about, a lot of the, like on this podcast, I mean, we didn't even talk about Aaron Judge. We didn't even talk about the return of Michael King. We didn't talk about, you know, Nestor Cortez and his continued excellence. Yeah. And, you know, some stuff will go wrong, but some stuff will go right that we don't know. And the thing that really sticks out to me is that there is proof of concept with this team. I mean, that you don't know the upper ceiling of a team, and we know the upper ceiling of this team, and it is what they showed at great lengthy portions of last year. And instead of being frustrated now that, you know, why didn't they put it all together last year? To me, that says it's largely the same group of guys, and they ran into some very bad injury luck at the end of last year. But despite it all, they were a 99-win team. And sure, Aaron Judge might be a little worse, but there are a lot of guys who might be a little better. And I caution everyone to assume that Aaron Judge will be significantly worse because, again, we didn't talk about him at all, but I think everybody knows how good he is. And he is this team, the heart and soul of this team. And I just, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to have another MVP caliber campaign. And that means this team will be right in the middle of, you know, playoff contention, World Series contention. Just so many things to be optimistic about. So many reasons to be excited. I could not agree more. I think I could just talk in circles about this, but, you know, it's time to see what this team can do on the field. But the most important thing to me is we do have that proof of concept. Like, this group of guys can be a world dominating baseball team, and that's very clear to see based on last year.
Yeah, I think you're right on. It's time to rate your confidence in this team, 1 to 10.
Where do we leave off? I guess new year, new confidence slate. Start at a 9 because I don't remember where I was, but I'm just very optimistic about how this team is going to go. I think specifically with the pitching staff, I mean, we've seen how good they can be, and they added Carlos freaking Rodon. And like I've said numerous times, just endless optimism about this team's ability to fix pitchers, create pitchers. So it's going to come down to the lineup. And like you said, I think the most important thing is there is a path to not playing any of the guys who suck, and there are trades to be made, and it's a long spring training camp. But the collection of guys they have right now, the pieces are there to have a really good lineup. And again, how do we know? We saw it at many points last year. So, you know, the Nestor injury, not great. Frankie Montas, I don't even know if I care that much. But right now, this team is yeah. they look ready to go. And, you know, a lot of guys aren't playing in the WBC. You know, that probably makes me more optimistic about their continued health throughout the spring and where they're going to be on opening day. So I'll start off at a 9. I don't think there's much higher to go because we just haven't seen anything. But I'm not going to go much lower because it's all vibes right now. No game results, just vibes.
Yeah, I think we left off at 8.5, if I remember correctly.
Was that pre-Rodon or post-Rodon?
That could have been pre-Rodon, though. And I know I just went on the whole thing about how the Yankees are going to win the World Series, which I do believe. I am going to go to a 9. I think it is mostly pitching staff because, you know, we know my belief in this lineup, but I think that I think to the extent that it's possible, people are underrating the Yankees pitching staff and particularly the bullpen. I mean, to bring back every piece who was of any value last year and then to add Ron Marinaccio, Mike King, and Tommy Canley over what you had in the playoffs is really serious. Like those are big deal arms. I think Jonathan Loaisiga on the whole will be better than he was last year. I think Clay Holmes on the whole will be better than he was in the last, like, you know, 55% of last year. There's a lot to like about the arms. My reservations about this team really mostly have to do with how people will react if the kids don't produce immediately, and the effects that that could have. Like, both people, meaning both fans and the you know, management, it would be very easy to overreact to Oswald Peraza or Oswaldo Cabrera coming out and starting slow and, you know, falling back into giving significant playing time to, you know, however many of Aaron Hicks, Josh Donaldson, and IKF are still around. And especially with the tailwinds that the Yankees should experience from the balanced schedule and, you know, just the return of guys from injury over what they had at the end of last year, I think it's critically important to give those guys time. I think one of the biggest things that hurt the Yankees in the playoffs last year beyond the injuries and the laws of physics was that Cabrera and Peraza just hadn't had quite enough experience to be depended on as major contributors. That affected the defense, it affected the lineup construction, it affected, I think, just their individual abilities to succeed. I think the Yankees would be very, very wise to give those guys basically as long a leash as possible in the beginning of next year to get their footing and to start to show us what they can really do, because I think they're going to be critically important players to the success of this team, you know, over the course of this next season. So that's my major reservation. But with that said, I'm supremely confident in this team. The vibes are off the charts, having brought back Aaron Judge and Anthony Rizzo, having Tommy Canley back in the clubhouse and in the bullpen, having, you know, an infusion of youth and energy, having Carlos Rodon on the mound. I think there's a lot to be excited about for this team, and I truly could not be more excited for the way this season is going to go. Whipple, any parting shots from you?
Yeah, you saying that, it's, I guess, kind of a dismal parting shot, but I just imagined a season, not that we would even be recording this pod, but if Aaron Judge was not on the Yankees and what that would look like right now. And I'm just glad that we do not live in the Aaron Judge timeline, both because I like recording the pod, but also we're talking about how great the vibes are. Like, there still would be Yankees baseball, and the vibes would be so bad. I mean,
oh my gosh.
I probably would have quit the internet. But suffice to say, I think it's going to be a fun season, and I just can't wait for it to get started next week and for many weeks to come.
Yeah. All right. So with that, we'll do this again soon. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter, where we're at Yankees Files. You can keep up with everything we're writing at YankeesFiles.com. And you can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy it, please rate, review, and subscribe. If you don't enjoy it, please just subscribe, but don't rate it or review it. We don't want you messing up those numbers. Whipple will do this again soon. Until then, let's go Yankees.